From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, happy Monday afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin met face-to-face today in Helsinki, Finland. The summit coming just days after 12 Russian military intelligence officers were indicted for hacking into the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton's bathroom server. The summit has drawn bipartisan criticism. The question is the criticism warranted? We'll talk about it with Texas Congressman Ted Poe, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, in just a moment. Also, in an embarrassing rebuke by our own party, California Democrats have endorsed Kevin DeLeon over five-term Senator Dianne Feinstein, claiming she is too much of a centrist. Is the Democratic Party headed for a civil war? Well, we'll talk about that with conservative political consultant and pollster Chris Wilson, who I think may have an answer. And a federal judge in Philadelphia has sided with the city against two faith-based adoption agencies. At issue is the city's demand that the religious organizations either drop their biblical view of marriage or stop placing homeless children in foster care. FRC's Vice President for Policy, Travis Weber, will be here on this latest case of religious intolerance. Also, I'll give you a quick update on Pastor Andrew Brunson in Turkey, an American pastor being held there for 2 years now. He has a hearing coming up on Wednesday. One of my colleagues at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom is there in Turkey. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, 43 years ago, the U.S. and former Soviet Union leaders met in Helsinki for what became known as the Helsinki Accords, an agreement which provided a roadmap for relative peace during the Cold War. Well, what will come of today's summit of the U.S. and Russian leader? As President Trump spent 2 hours with President Vladimir Putin, and he says he confronted Putin about hacking the U.S. elections, and Putin again denied his country's involvement. There is much reaction coming from Capitol Hill, a lot of criticism coming from both political parties. With us now is Congressman Ted Poe. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas and is a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to talk to you.
Well, Congressman, let me get your first take on what we're hearing took place in the summit. You saw the president's statement, Vladimir Putin's statement. What's your first take?
It is good for us that the President Trump and Putin met. I think it is very important that we have dialogue with foreign leaders, including our enemies. And like Churchill said, jaw-jaw is better than war-war. Of course, we don't know what took place the 2 hours where no one was present, including staff. Maybe we will find out. I would have hoped that the president had gone further, at least based upon what he said, in some areas. The one that the Russian meddling into our elections. The Russians meddled in our elections in 2016. That doesn't mean President Trump had anything to do with it or even knew about it. I think the president should have made that distinction rather than salt pedal their involvement. But he did say he talked to Putin about it. Don't know what he said to him. I hope he told him and warned him that that's action. It won't be tolerated. They did talk about North Korea. I think that is excellent. ISIS and Iran and Syria were discussed, but we don't know what was discussed. There were some other things that apparently were not discussed, and the perception to me is that Putin was much stronger and bolder in his representation of his country than we were in ours. That's my perception of it.
Well, let's take a quick listen. I got a clip from President Trump's remarks at the joint press conference that he held, or statement that he held with Vladimir Putin following their two-hour meeting. Here's what he had to say.
During today's meeting, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt this was a message best delivered in person. Spent a great deal of time talking about it. And President Putin may very well want to address it, and very strongly, because he feels very strongly about it, and he has an interesting idea.
Now, Congressman, interesting point, and I appreciate your candid analysis of this, and that's the reason we got you on the program. You're a straight shooter. And, you know, the president did seem to soft-pedal that issue a bit. But, you know, if he confronted him in the two-hour session they had privately, we don't know exactly how he did it. But I don't think he's going to get out on the stage and say that Vladimir is lying, and I don't believe him. I still think, as you said, it's better that we're talking, and this could lead to further conversation. And who knows what he said behind closed door. Maybe he said, we know you did it, and we're watching, and don't do it again.
I can think that you're right. Just watch it. The 18 months we've seen President Trump operate, I think he was much – it could have been much stronger behind closed doors than he was at the – At the press conference, and he may have been. I don't necessarily care for Putin's solution, which was that he has these Russian military spies, the hackers, be interviewed by the Russian government and to see whether or not they did it or not. I don't know that that was the right answer, but it does go back to what we don't know and only the perception of what we saw at the press conference. I hope that there are further meetings by the president and by Putin. We have got to solve a lot of these problems, including the fact of the Russian aggression into Georgia next month, the 10-year anniversary of the Russian invasion into Georgia, and then got Crimea and eastern Ukraine as well. I hope that there are discussions about those issues and very upfront about that. I'd like to see the president and to meet with Putin again.
Well, and I think that's probably his goal. I would think, knowing or watching how he operates, is that I don't think we're finished in North Korea. I think we're going to see more there. But I think he is establishing a baseline of communications. And he said this before. He likes to deal face-to-face, and he likes to have a personal relationship. And I think you get more mileage out of that. Now, if we start seeing things that we're giving Russia a pass, then that's something else. I agree with you. I think perception is important here, and I do think that perception it didn't come off as strong as I think the president would have liked it to. But I don't think we can determine the outcome of this based upon what we saw today.
And you're right about that, though. You know, the people were complaining about President Trump meeting with Kim and that some molest saying that that wasn't a good idea. And, of course, it was a good idea. There'd be future meetings. I think that the United States did the right thing talking to Kim and North Korea. Hope the president does it again. Hope he and then talks to Putin again, and then we'll see what, if anything, there are happens regarding specific items that are of great concern to the United States that the Russians are involved in. Meddling is just one of those. And I think in the next few days we'll see maybe some other reactions from the White House. I certainly hope so.
Let me ask you this question, Congressman Poe. From your vantage point, what you know, what you see happening around the world from the Foreign Affairs Committee. I mean, my perception is Russia is a foe. They're a serious threat to our country. I think it is good that we talk with them, but I do think that we have to realize that they are an enemy, and they have they're about some things that are not to our benefit.
Well, they are. They are the number one geopolitical enemy of the United States. Just talking about NATO, NATO was designed and is still designed now more than ever to thwart Russian aggression. and the president's response to our NATO friends, rather than insulting them, he just told them like it is, that they've got to contribute more money to the protection of NATO, which includes most of Europe and the North Atlantic air countries and the United States. And that will help thwart Russian aggression by them spending more military. But they are a different kind of enemy than Iran and North Korea and China are. They are not only an enemy to us, they're an enemy to Europe as well. So I think we have to deal up front with them, be strong. Maybe that took place behind closed doors. I don't know. But we have to certainly be keep our eye on the Russian bear, because they are still growling at us.
So ultimately, Congressman Ted Poe, what do you think will come from today's meeting in Helsinki between the two leaders?
I suspect that there will be in the next few days, maybe weeks, United States will be able to articulate better what we expect from the Russians and don't expect from the Russians, and that will be communicated more to Putin and his people, that we know what they're up to, that we won't allow it, and here are those specifics. I think that's something that we're going to see in the next few weeks, that these differences of opinion on what Russia is doing, that we're going to let the Russians know exactly where we stand, and that we will not tolerate that. Then on other things, there might be some mutual decision-making together, like on Syria. I don't know what's going to happen in Syria. Nobody does. But we have to have the Russians engaged in a solution with what we're going to do with Assad. Maybe we will say something like that. These four issues that were brought up, North Korea, ISIS, Iran, and Syria, we may see some definite statements about coming from our administration on some cooperation on those four areas. I hope so. But I think there's going to be some progress. We'll hear about the progress. I think we're going to hear about what took place behind those 2 hours of closed door. And I hope that, once again, the president does deal with Putin on a firm level that he should. But I hope that he does meet with him again if he so desires.
All right, Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk to you as well.
All right. Texas Congressman Ted Poe represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. This president is bold, okay? He doesn't play not to lose. He plays to win, okay? And so taking on some of these challenges, North Korea, Russia, you know, you're not going to hit a home run every time. I think you got to give this time to play out. I think it was a good first step. I think he could have been a little harder on Putin, given, all the background of what we know about what they did in the election and so on and so forth. But we'll see, as Congressman Poe said, how this plays out in the days ahead. All right, coming up, is there a civil war raging within the Democratic Party? We'll discuss with this issue with the political pollster and consultant Chris Wilson when we return. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but just in case, this weekend we were encouraging churches across the country to pray for Pastor Andrew Brunson, who is being held in Turkey. He's been there for about 2 years. Has a hearing coming up Wednesday in which he could be effectively sentenced for life. 35 years is what he's looking at. Anyway, we're sending him some message to let him know that he's not forgotten, that we're praying for him. And if you'd like to sign that pledge, or that pledge to pray for him, go to TonyPerkins.com. I actually have one of my fellow commissioners who is in Turkey right now, and I'm going to transmit those tonight, and they will deliver those. So if you'd like to encourage Pastor Brunson, go to TonyPerkins.com and sign that pledge. All right, Democratic leaders in California sent a stinging message to Senator Dianne Feinstein over the weekend when they endorsed liberal state lawmaker Kevin DeLeon for Senate. Now, she already beat him in the primary, but they went ahead and endorsed him, which I think allows him to run in the general election. Now, their reasoning is that Feinstein is too much of a centrist. She's too moderate. Wow. That tells you a lot about the Democratic Party. Joining us now is Chris Wilson. He is the CEO of WPA Intelligence. Chris, what do you make of this? Is a civil war brewing in the Democratic Party?
I think the civil war has been going on for a while, Tony. And the fact is, as you pointed out, whenever Dianne Feinstein represents the moderate wing of the Democratic Party, then it shows just how far left the Democrats have moved. And you see this not just in California. I mean, it's not unique to that situation. I could go through race after race this year where Democrats have dumped moderates. And I'm defining them as moderates. And frankly, I wouldn't have done that 6 months ago. I would have called most of these people, I'll give you an example. Current Congressman Don Bacon, he beat Democrat Congressman Brad Ashford. Brad Ashford was, by all accounts, a liberal in Congress. That's why he lost to Don Bacon after just one term. But Brad Ashford, former member of Congress, Omaha, Nebraska, lost in a primary to a woman named Carrie Eastman, who is an extreme left-wing liberal. And it is another example in Texas, where you had the son of former Governor Mark White made it into the runoff against a lesbian sheriff from Dallas County, very left-wing, pro-Bernie Sanders, and White probably would have had a chance to at least run a competitive race, a credible race against Governor Greg Abbott, but he lost to Lupe Valdez. And it is, you're seeing this in race after race where Democrats are nominating candidates who really make the general election almost uncompetitive because they are so far to the left. Now, Feinstein's most likely going to win re-election. She mm-hmm. is, because there's no Republican in the race. You know, the way California works is they have a jungle primary and the top two make it to the general election regardless of party. So she'll most likely still win. But, you know, Tony, I don't think anything better represents the move to the left of the Democratic Party than abolishing ICE. You know, almost complete across the board support for socialized medicine now. The identity politics they're practicing, the political correctness. You say anything that is not seen as politically correct, you're immediately stricken from what is seen as the current mainstream of the Democratic Party. The desire to increase taxes to sky high rates and being against the basic tax rates passed by the current White House. I mean, there is just. It is a movement that I think is unprecedented in American politics, and it is Democrats. They're going to put some socialists in Congress. They've already got, you know, they've had Bernie Sanders in the Senate, but they're going to put some socialists in Congress, and we're going to see it move even further than the left. And I think, frankly, it's bad for democracy overall. And we haven't even talked about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yet, who beat Joe Crowley, the number four ranking House Democrat, and she's defined herself as a socialist. And so these upsets that are occurring in primary after primary on the Democratic side are, if it's a safe Democrat district, then they probably put them in Congress. I think it actually helps Republicans in whenever they nominate them. Like, I mean,
did we lose you, Chris? I think we
got it because it took him from having a competitive race to one that's probably not that competitive. No, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah, I lost you there for a minute. You're back. No, that's fine. So the macro effect of this, I mean, this is fascinating, but, I mean, you got to look at this long term. I mean, the Democratic Party is becoming more liberal. I mean, when Nancy Pelosi is not sufficiently liberal or progressive, the term they like to use, for some of these progressive candidates that have won in the primaries, that tells you something about the Democratic Party. But also we see the Republican Party is moving to a more conservative ideological holding as well. Is this a part of the increasingly polarized political environment in which we live?
Well, I think that's a lot of it. But I don't know that I believe that I think the Republican Party is. And I know that's the message the mainstream media likes to carry, is that Republicans are moving further to the right. Well, that's really not the case. Republicans, the tenets of Republicanism have stayed the same really since I got involved in politics. Low taxes, a strong national defense, more personal freedom. And so you see small debates within the Republican Party over issues, but you don't see it over systems of government. And that's what we're seeing right now going on in the Democratic Party. You have members who are being nominated and in some cases even elected that do not believe in capitalism. They believe that we should change our system of government to a socialist system. And that is, there's no comparison to that in the Republican Party right now.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, I have seen an ideological shift. Now, you're right in terms of not a new view of government. It is they are, I would say, Republicans are returning to those core tenets of republicanism or conservatism. Chris, can you hang on? We're up against a break, but I want to finish this conversation because I think it's very important, because there is a divide in this country, and one set of principles and ideals is going to determine the direction of this country, and these things are important. So, Chris, hang on. I want to finish this conversation. Travis Weber is still to come. Going to be talking about a disturbing federal court decision in Philadelphia. Latest example of religious hostility. That's coming shortly. So don't go away. More Washington Watch still to come. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Sign the prayer pledge for Pastor Andrew Brunson. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Joining me is Chris Wilson. He is the CEO of WPA Intelligence. We're talking about the growing divide within the Democratic Party, a civil war that is brewing that, quite frankly, in the fall's election, I shouldn't say this too loudly because I don't want them to hear it, but it could benefit conservatives. But Chris, what we're seeing from a macro standpoint is a increasingly, I would say, based on my 20 plus years in politics, that the middle that used to be fairly robust has shrunk. And there's not many people in the middle anymore. Increasingly, people have chosen sides ideologically and politically. Maybe not party registration wise, but certainly from when it comes time to voting.
I think that's right. And in fact, what you see is more of a from a strategic standpoint, which is what I do, is try and help my clients win elections. We are looking at 2018 as being a turnout election. That is, you have to motivate the 2016 Trump Republican, the 2016 Republican that turned out and voted and gave Republicans majorities in the House and Senate, to turn out and vote again in 2018. And it's not always an easy thing to do. And
well, let me stop you on that point, because okay, what they did, what Donald Trump did, was what Barack Obama actually did in his previous elections, which Republicans don't historically do, and that was, when the primary was over, Donald Trump did not stop running as a conservative. He ran even harder, really exciting and energizing the base. Am I correct?
You are correct. And that's I think that's an important distinction, because where you see Democrat, and I'm going to call them Democrat socialists, because that's what Bernie Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez, they call themselves, Democrat socialists. So where they are running is in hardcore base Democrat areas. And it's not. So how does that, where does that affect, let's say, a race in Montana, for instance, between John Tester, who's the Democrat incumbent there in a state Donald Trump won by 20-plus points, against Matt Rosendale, who's the conservative Republican there. Well, guess what? There's not a lot of Democrat socialists in Montana. They're going to turn out and reelect John Tester. And so as they see the Ocasio-Cortez of the world, and the Dianne Feinsteins being thrown out as being too moderate, what then on the flip side of that, you see Republicans who are going to be motivated by this. And it is a, I do think what you indicated earlier is this is from a standpoint of the two parties running against each other, and you do see the middle start to collapse. Campaigns become all about motivating the base. And as Republicans see the Democratic Party move further to the left, and those swing voters that did exist, the swing voters that elected John Tester last time, or elected Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, or elected Joe Manchin in West Virginia, those are all Democrat senators in Trump states, they begin to see a party that, even though their incumbent may look like them or maybe somebody they could support, they can't support that party any longer. And so it is, I think, what the Democratic Party did to Dianne Feinstein by refusing to endorse her is a disservice to maybe some of those candidates that might be moderates. But you know what? I'm not here to give advice or to give counsel to Democrats. I am, like you said, glad to see it happen, because I think it is the true face of the Democratic Party. What you have are policies they had supported for a long time, but now you have people actually accepting the labels that go with those policies.
Right. And a lot of those policies were kind of being pushed quietly, but
that's
now
right.
You have them running openly embracing them. And I do think that was actually one of my questions I was going to ask you, because I agree with you. I think Tester, McCaskill in Missouri.
McCaskill, yeah. Donnelly in Indiana.
They run a risk of actually seeing some of these more moderate Democrats. And there's you know, we used to have blue dog Democrats. Those were the socially conservative Democrats, more fiscally liberal or moderate. They're no longer there. I mean, you got Lipinski is from is about the only one left from Illinois, and I think people are looking. Well, look, this party has left me, and especially with the populist policies of Donald Trump, I think he may be attracting some of those who are just said the Democratic Party has gone too far.
That's right. I agree with that completely. And it's, again, we could go through multiple races. I mean, I was just looking at Pennsylvania before I got on the phone with you, where it was in the competitive primaries, primary after primary, moderate incumbents at the state level lost to the hardcore left-wing and even socialist liberals. And it's happening in other states, too. It's not just California. It's happening in red states and purple states. And so as Democrats begin to elect and nominate these types of candidates, I think you're going to see it pay off for Republicans down the road.
All right. I got to leave it there, Chris Wilson, but I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about in the weeks and months ahead as we move toward the general election. So thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you, Tony.
Chris Wilson with WPA Intelligence. They do polling and consulting for conservative candidates around the country. They do some really good stuff. They dig deep. It's one of the reasons I have him on is because he's got data to back up what he says. And the numbers don't lie. Okay, when we come back, our own Travis Weber, the Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, joins me actually to talk about two cases. One disturbing out of Philadelphia, a judge siding with the city, basically saying the city can discriminate against religious adoption agencies. We're going to talk about that, and then a positive case on the life front. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. Okay, I mentioned at the top of the program, Pastor Andrew Brunson, native of North Carolina, or that's his home state, has been ministering in Turkey for about 23 years, leading a church. And about this church is about an hour from what in the scripture is Ephesus. And he was about 2 years ago called in. He thought he was going to be, they had applied for, I think, longer term status. And he was told that he was being removed from the country. And then he was thrown in prison, accused of spying. Of trying to overthrow the government because he's a Christian. Anyway, he has not been sentenced. He has been held for about 2 years. And this Wednesday, there will be a another hearing. Now, they've kept pushing these back, but it's anticipated that they will come to a decision on Wednesday. So we've been asking folks to pray for him as we've been getting information from him. That he's obviously very discouraged, distraught, separated from his family. And anyway, we want to pray for him that regardless of what comes out of Wednesday, that he will be encouraged and ultimately will be released. And folks are working to do that. It was a subject of a lot of discussion at our last meeting last week at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. He is not forgotten. We need to let him know that he's not forgotten. And so one of my fellow commissioners is on the ground in Turkey, and actually I hope to be able to bring a report from her after the hearing on Wednesday here on Washington Watch, if we can work it out. But I am going to transmit to her all of those people who are pledging to pray for Pastor Andrew. So this weekend we sent it out to some of our churches, and folks signed the pledge to pray. So if you would like to do that, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and you'll see it up there. You can click on it, follow the links over, sign it, but you got to do it tonight so that we can get that over there to them first thing in the morning. All right, website TonyPerkins.com. Okay, in two different but very important cases coming out of federal courts, we see the importance of federal judges, those who get it right and those who get it wrong. In Philadelphia, a federal judge sided with the city against Catholic Social Services because of its strongly held religious beliefs. They are an adoption provider with a long history of caring for children in their city. But because they will not change their biblical view of marriage and place children in same-sex homes, even though there are almost two dozen other providers that are willing to do that and doing that, they have gone after Catholic Service, Social Services, and Bethany Adoption Services, and basically telling them either you violate your beliefs or you get out of the adoption service, placing foster kids and children up for adoption. Joining me now to talk about this is Travis Weber. He is the Vice President of Policy for the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
How significant of a decision is this in Philadelphia?
I think it's very significant. You have a judge here ruling on the very issue that we have focused on so much over the past recent years, several years, even going back further at FRC, this issue of the conflict between religious freedom and the LGBT movement and those who would advance individual sexual liberties as policy using the guise of law. This conflict is a major religious freedom conflict. Here you have the issue squarely being ruled upon in the context of groups that don't want to violate their faith when placing children, raising religious freedom claims, and now you have a judge shooting them down in a very ill-informed opinion. So it's very significant, and people should know about this opinion.
Well, and folks, if you were listening last week, we had Alabama Congressman Robert Aderholt was on, and we were talking about an amendment that he added, what we call a rider, to one of the appropriations bills last week in the House. It was the labor and HHS appropriation bill, and it simply provided that those who are in the business of adoption, foster care services, that they can operate according to their faith, that they cannot be denied the right to operate simply because they have a biblical view of human sexuality. And we're seeing this in cities, well, some states, cities across the country, that are beginning to discriminate against religious organizations. Now, to be very clear, these policies that are being pursued do not deny anyone else the right to be foster parents or adopt children. It simply says that a faith-based organization in the adoption or foster care business ministry cannot be denied the ability to do that simply because of their view of human sexuality. Now, this case most likely is going to be appealed, Travis, and I would not be surprised to see this as much like the Masterpiece Cakes case make its way to the Supreme Court.
It could. It certainly will be appealed, and we'll see what happens. Interestingly, the party cited the Masterpiece decision. The judge acknowledges that decision and says, yes, we must resolve these issues with tolerance, but I think goes on to then resolve them with intolerance. So basically saying, you know, your beliefs are overruled to the organizations at issue here, basically dismissing every concern that Catholic Social Services has raised in this case, giving the government's interest great weight, dismissing Catholic Social Services claims, basically telling them there's no substantial burden on their religious beliefs when analyzing the claim under the Pennsylvania Religious Freedom Act. I think this is it's just very wrong as a matter of legal interpretation. It's very wrong as a matter of the policies we should want when we look at the public square. But I think clearly you look at the Masterpiece citation here, then dismissing this, dismissing the mayor's comments and all the comments directed at Catholic Social Services as somehow not analogous to Masterpiece. Well,
they were analogous to masterpiece, and the court can't get around this by saying, well, they weren't targeting Catholicism because Bethany Christian Services is also, you know, they're also a group that's been wrapped up in this here as a non-discrimination issue. It totally sidesteps the fact that what was being targeted was the Christian belief on marriage and sexuality. And I don't know if this was ignorance or negligence on the part of the court, but it's really kind of ridiculous that the court looks at the fact that one is Catholic and one is not when ascertaining the religious belief. You have Christians of various backgrounds, even non-Christians, with this belief on marriage, and everyone must be free to live it out. It's unfortunate the court really got this case wrong.
And Travis, there were other adoption agencies, foster care services in the state or in the city that would facilitate same-sex placement in same-sex households.
Yeah, we've got 30 agencies working with the city in this case. You've got two of them, one involved in this lawsuit that has said, we have our beliefs that we can't do this. We have to decline to place them as the city wants us to place them. Well, couples and everyone else who wants to place children with households with two parents of the same sex or same-sex couples can do that with the 28 other agencies in the public square in Philadelphia. And this fact really kind of, I think, makes the case for the reality that this is not about some sort of access or provision of services. This is about forcing everyone to comply with whatever vision the government takes on philosophical religious beliefs in the public square.
Not only is this a religious issue from a standpoint of a biblical definition of human sexuality and marriage, but the social science, they haven't been able, even though they've been clamping down on it, trying to discourage people and threatening them and intimidating them from doing it, the social science is still very clear on this matter, that children raised with a married mom and dad are much better off than any other children, any other configuration. Not to say that there are some who do a great job, but by and large, the data shows that this is the best place. In fact, Dr. Mark Ragnaris found that children raised by gay or lesbian parents on average are at a significant disadvantage when compared to children raised by the intact family of their married biological mother and father. So there is a the social science that backs this up as well. But again, this is being driven by a political agenda, not a scientific agenda, as we've seen with so many other things, including the gender issue. All right, let me, before we run out of time, there is some positive news coming out of the Fifth Circuit that shows, again, that elections have consequences, because when you have outcomes of elections in which people pledge to appoint strict constructionists to the courts, you come out with different results, and that's what came out of the Fifth Circuit. Explain that case out of Texas.
Yeah, so this is a procedural point in the case, an initial stage of this case involving Texas government's regulation of the burial of fetal remains, basically caring for these children that have been aborted. The government was sued by the same group involved in a previous abortion case, Whole Woman's Health. They looped in the Texas Conference of Catholic Bishops that offered to care for these children's remains properly. At the district court level, you had a very hostile a ruling from a district court judge ordering the Texas Conference of Catholic Bishops to turn over all sorts of documents, very similar to the Houston pastor's situation that we remember well. Thankfully, this was reversed by the Fifth Circuit Judge Edith Jones. Judge James Ho ruling for the Texas Conference of Catholic Bishops, saying that the district court was out of line with demanding that they turn over all sorts of internal communications on this tight timeline, violated the First Amendment rights. This is a really good ruling. It's almost like we have a tale of two courts today with these different rulings, and a reminder of the point you made about judicial confirmations. Judge James Ho recently confirmed to the Fifth Circuit siding with Judge Jones and concurring in this opinion, in his concurrence, noting that it is hard to imagine a better example of how far we have strayed from the text and original understanding of the Constitution than this case, referring to the lower court's ruling. So there, clear judicial pronouncement on the importance of originalism, really heartening to see judges like him sitting on the bench ruling on these important matters.
Yeah, and of course, that's that was the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, right?
Yeah, Fifth Circuit, Federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
So we've actually seen a record number of federal judges at the circuit level appointed by Donald Trump and have been confirmed, which is significant because the higher you go up the judicial food chain, so to speak, they have lasting consequences and they're more impactful. So the circuit level, in which we have seen the president appoint some stellar candidates, that's going to have a really long-term effect upon getting our nation and our judicial system back on track with the Constitution.
Yeah, I think it will. You know, and as we talk about this, it's important for people to remember that we're interested in following the plain meaning of the Constitution, the text, the words on the page, the text of statutes. This is not liberals are the ones who use the law to push their policy preferences. Conservatives are saying, let's follow the law, and if we don't like it, we'll change it through the proper means. It's ultimately very, very important that we have good judges like Judge Jones and Judge James Ho on the Fifth Circuit because, yeah, this procedural issue that they ruled on just recently is likely to not go any higher, likely to not go to the Supreme Court. Now, the district court is going to continue presiding over this case, but it's important to have good judges like these on the Fifth Circuit. This case is very, very similar to what we saw in Houston several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a discovery issue. The court intruded into the religious interworkings of a religious organization, ordering them to turn over material in violation of their religious freedom and First Amendment rights. And very good to see judges recognizing this, and contrary to the district court's refusal to recognize this, very good to see the Fifth Circuit recognizing this and siding with Texas Conference of Catholic Bishops here.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to drop the gavel there. We're out of time. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Travis Weber, Vice President of Public Policy here at Policy, the Family Research Council, and also heads up our Center for Religious Liberty. The president, about one out of every eight circuit court judges has been appointed by Donald Trump and confirmed. So significant after not quite 2 years. And it's important. We're not looking for conservative outcomes. We're looking for constitutional outcomes, which tend to be conservative. We're fine with the Constitution. Now, there are times you'll get decisions you don't agree with, but that's okay. I agree with the Constitution. I just want judges who will rule according to the Constitution. All right, folks, about out of time. Let me encourage you again. Send a note of encouragement to Pastor Andrew Brunson. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Sign the pledge to pray for him. All right. We're out of time. Until we meet again, let me leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, well, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.